for Inclusive Childcare welcomes you to Inclusion Matters. We share resources and information to support quality childcare for all children. By partnering with early childhood professionals, parents, grandparents, and other caregivers, we work together to help every young child thrive. Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weigel, the Executive Director, and I am here today with a friend and a partner and a colleague who many of you have heard on our podcast when we have done Somali podcasts. Her name is Marian Hassan, and she is an educator who has worked in the field of early literacy for a very long time. And she's going to talk to us today about a project that she has been working on and building for a while now, and it's become something really exciting. So Marian, welcome. I'm so glad you're here to have this conversation.
Thank you so much, Priscilla. Thank you for inviting me. I want to begin by expressing appreciation for your leadership in early care and education. And I want to say your work has consistently supported early childhood professionals and has especially supported and been an advocate to uplift bilingual Somali providers in the field, and that has made a difference. So I want to say thank you for the work that you do.
Oh, you're so dear. Thank you very much, Marian. I appreciate that, and CICC appreciates that. A lot of that has been also our partnership with you. So let's talk about the good work that you're doing and this exciting project.
Yes, I'm extremely excited to be here to talk about Sing Again. Sing Again, Somali Lullaby and Oral History Project, is a project that has been born out of the necessity to document Somali oral traditions, songs that we've sung to children for generations, which has stayed in the oral tradition, most of them. So through this project, I've been able to interview Somali elderly grandmothers in the Twin Cities and in different parts of Minnesota. And I've interviewed large, elderly Somali grandmothers who I have been the keepers of this tradition. I've been able to ask them questions about their own story, how they have reared their own children and the songs that they used to sing. So this project came out of the necessity to capture their knowledge and their experiences with this oral tradition. Also, the second reason of why this project, why now and the purpose of it is that Somali children and Somali youth and children are losing the home language very rapidly. Because the Somali community has not been here for generations. This is the second generation now since the Somalis have come to Minnesota and made their homes here. But what we're seeing is a great speed of language loss, staggering speed of language loss. And we think that from an early literacy perspective, that we must capture these materials so that we could use them in homes, in learning settings to support early literacy for children. And these will provide rich language experiences. And the goal is not only for Somali children, but all families and all children will appreciate and enjoy this material.
Oh, absolutely. So in order to get started on really capturing this and to have the funds to do this, you received a grant, correct?
I did. I was very fortunate to have received the Minnesota Legacy Heritage and Cultural Grant. This is a grant that's given to projects aiming to do language preservation, which is what this project is about. And it's been a privilege to receive this grant to make it possible. If I tell you a little bit more about the project, so out of this work, what will come out of this work, is a lullaby, a playlist of songs sang by the grandmothers themselves, with children can listen to wherever they are. They can listen to them in the car. They can listen to them in their homes. It's going to create access to rich literacy experiences, because as we know, oral language comes before written language. And so children hear oral language. We speak to the to children from a very young age, and they work with oral tradition. And so we will have a playlist of the songs. Also, it will produce, we will have a collection, first of its kind collection of a volume of Somali children's lullabies, which will be in bilingual, which actually will be published on June 30th. In addition to that, we will, the University of Minnesota has partnered with the project and have been able to create teaching instructions to go with the lullabies. So we have that material that teachers can use in their classrooms. And excitingly, also the College of St. Olaph has been able to create music notes. Can you believe that? Music notes.
Oh my. Oh.
So anyone can amazingly can listen to the music and to the songs and be able to read the songs. So that's kind of the foundation of this work.
My goodness, Marion, that's so exciting. And I love that it wasn't, I mean, it was a project that was so near and dear to your heart. You've been, you know, trying to figure out ways to preserve these precious, precious songs and the language of your community, but also that the university has built it into now teacher education and offering some of those tools to really provide creative opportunities for future teachers as they're learning and growing and gaining their own skill set. Oh, it's just, and so now tell, so when you're talking about the, and I'm thinking about our listeners out there who would be very interested in hearing these lullabies, how do they, how, and you said they're going to be, something will be published on June 30th. What was that?
It's a collection of, so through the project, we have been able to, I've been able to collect, song lullabies from all regions of Somalia, which is not something that usually there are several very famous lullabies that we all know. One of them is we call it Huwaye Huwa, Hoye Machukto, Kabah Kabah Ed, which we're talking to the child, where's your mom? And maybe she kind of really being silly with the child and saying, maybe she's gone for a long way, of long journey, and will she come back? And these lullabies are original, so they're not made softer and nicer. They're beautiful songs. They're set in a nomadic setting, most of them. And so they're speaking to that culture of be safe, don't be out there without for a child, because it is out in the environment. So be careful with the elements. Yeah. So the question of the book will have that, all of the material. So we've collected, I've been able to collect over 60 songs, but this book will have 41 of the lullabies translated, not translated really, because we cannot translate poetry and songs in a way that keeps the integrity of the original song, but I've been able to reimagine and capture the meaning and the depth of each lullaby as I put them in English.
Oh my, that would be a challenge. And I've heard you sing some of those lullabies, and it's beautiful and soothing, but I love learning about the context of it being really focused on the nomadic community and the safety and the elements and those kind of things too, which anyone, I mean, there's even in the city here, when I'm thinking about who would think they would be useful, people who are just looking to add to their repertoire of lullabies, who are caring for young infants. And it's just, there's such a nice repetition and a soothing beat and mode of a lullaby. And the ones that you're talking about too, it's just very comforting and soothing for an infant. So I could see that people outside of the Somali community would want to be exploring them as well.
Absolutely. So when I say nomadic life, I would say, let me clarify, because the Somali culture, depending on what region we speak about, there is the traditional nomadic setting, which is an incredibly rich oral tradition and very poetic, and people entertain themselves when they're attending and herding their animals or goats. They entertain themselves with these, not only the lullabies that they might sing to their children, but all kinds of work songs that they're keeping busy mm-hmm. with, because there were no obviously access to other kinds of entertainment tools. And they have, they're one with nature, they're out there and they have time. And with that is the creation of rich literature. However, even though those songs come from the nomadic setting, we continue through the generations to sing to children in the city, in the small town. In fact, one of the illustrations in the book is a mother right here in the Twin Cities, in a mm-hmm. setting, inside a room, looking. If you see the image in the background, it's right here. Cars outside, parked outside. So children are sung wherever there might be. So we want to be able to make them accessible to different kind of wherever that family might be. The Sing Again, the entire title of this project is to really sing again, because we're not singing to children anymore because of the change in the family dynamics, that mothers are working more outside the home, children are in childcare settings. So we mm-hmm. want families to come together and to have that attachment and unity as a mother and a baby, as a father and a baby, to sing to children, because bilingualism has to have equal input of both languages to maintain fluency in both languages. Mm-hmm. So if you're speaking to a child in Somali or Spanish or Hmong, that child will maintain the home language. But the moment they begin to learn English, the more English exposure and less of the home language, then you end up with less of the home language and it goes away eventually. And then the child speaks only one language, which is the dominant language that they interact with most of the time.
And we know just from the research out there too, that dual language is so great for a child's building of skills long-term and all their learning and for our brains. And so this is just another opportunity for folks to really take advantage of something that you've worked very hard on collecting and putting together. And so Marian, I'm going to throw you a loop here. I didn't talk to you about this question, but I'm just curious, when you think back to this project and all the time and you know, I know it's so dear to your heart, what are some of the surprises that you've experienced in this process?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One of the most amazing thing is that families always, regardless of whatever conditions they've lived in, I've noticed this emotional attachment of grandmothers who have parented their children years ago, who are very emotional and very attached to children who have come to the diaspora, and they're constantly speaking about our children, even though it's not their biological children, but they're constantly across the board are speaking about our children. They're concerned about language loss. I've heard many of the grandmothers saying, I love to be able to talk to my children, but we speak a different language and there's not enough language, shared language, to really share each other's emotions. That's something that comes up all the time. And also such excitement and joy when they look back and talk about parenting their children, and they will get excited and sing. And usually when we begin interviews, I have spent up. Usually my plan is to get to know the grandmother and visit her, and then go back and visit again and begin the recording. And many times I will go back twice or three times because this story was not done. We spend the first day, couple of hours, just getting to know each other and telling the grandmother about the project. But what I noticed is just the incredible amount of emotions attached to language, and it was heartwarming, but also compelling to any way that we can from a childcare setting or any other learning setting in the home, how important it is to support families to speak the same language. Because in the Somali community now, what I see happening, and one of my desires to really do this project, was seeing parents and children speaking to each other in what we know, as you know, in the field as survival language. Mm-hmm. So the mother is speaking in English that she's not in, doesn't know enough to, there's no fluency, and she doesn't speak English well, trying to speak to that child who's not speaking Somali either. Mm-hmm. So it's a very difficult situation to see when we know that language acquisition is accessible, it's possible by speaking to children and speaking to children about everything on a normal basis, and that's how children acquire language. Speaking to them, reading to them in the home language, which is going to make the acquisition of the English language very easy and very accessible, because if a child understands the concept of a desk or water, it will be easy to transfer from the home language to the English.
Absolutely. And Marianne, I know you're working on website accessibility and a place to find all these amazing lullabies and access them. Can you tell our listeners more about where they can go, what they can do next, and kind of those next steps so that they can use some of these great tools that you've worked so hard on?
Thank you. Thank you. The first place will be to look out for the book. The book will be distributed to bookstores. I hope programs will invite us to come to the classroom and share the curriculum. And when we say curriculum, we've been intentional to say teaching suggestions and teaching instructions. We don't want the material to be intimidating. So I'm hoping, I've been in the field for many, many years. So it is my greatest hope that there will be an opportunity to come to the classroom and really sing to children, not only Somali children, but talk to providers about how important it is to sing to their children, perhaps creating lullabies for their own children in the classroom, and perhaps inviting parents to sing with their children and model that. So that's one way. And looking out for the book and hopefully coming to events that we might have in different locations. The other one will be going into the going on the website, where we will have a playlist of the songs, which is really exciting. I could never get enough of listening and singing those lullabies myself, because some of the lullabies come from the nomadic setting, but many of them come from farming communities, some come from city, some come from the riverside. So it's fascinating to listen the different experiences reflected in the songs. So from a farming community, the songs will speak about that and the routines in that setting. So yeah, so it's fascinating. It's wonderful.
Very fascinating. So tell me, so you were learning new lullabies through this project as well. So it wasn't just ones that you had grown up hearing, but just all of these new acquaintances that you have. And are you staying in touch with all of these grandmothers who have been sharing these lullabies? And what is their role in the future, if any? I'm just curious.
That's such a great question, actually. Thank you. So yes, the grandmothers will stay in contact. In fact, we have been inviting them to come and share the songs with children. We will have events, circles where, for example, in May, we have two events coming up where moms and their young adult daughters who perhaps in the future might become mothers, and also young Somali mothers who are not speaking Somali, to come with their children and really begin to create songs for their children, lullabies for their children, but also learn the lullaby. When I was interviewing, it was incredible to me that I only knew something like 20 5% of the lullabies that I collected. Mm. And considering I'm someone who have always enjoyed literature and have always loved songs and poetry, but yet these are not written lullabies. Nice. So yeah, so it was an incredible exposure, and I sang to my children when they were young, and yeah, I had one mom who attended one of the workshops, and she said, you know, I sang my son who was struggling with something, he's 27, she said one day he just came and I held him, he's a 27-year-old, but she said I sung to him.
I love it. Said,
it's amazing. And she said, you know, it was very soothing for him.
Yes.
So what I would like to tell providers is that when we sing to children, we're also singing to ourselves, because lullabies are soothing and we're rocking, and it's helping us calm down and be in tune with that experience we're having with children. So it's a very healing tool, and especially for the Somali community, we have had a lot of things happen in our community, and we're a very resilient community. But also, in addition to decades of war, as you know, with the ICE events here over the winter, we know that families are stressed and there's a lot of anguish and uncertainty. So my desire is to hold children, whatever your relationship is, an aunt, you know, mother, sibling who's older than that child, and to really be with each other and to sing these lullabies.
Oh, that's so beautiful, Marian. And please share the information about those events with us, and we can push that out through our social media and our avenues as well, because we want people to know about these wonderful opportunities that are going to be occurring for folks to really learn these lullabies to share. And I'm so glad you included the part about soothing ourselves when we're singing and humming. I was holding a 4-month-old infant the other day, and oh, what a treat to hold a baby. But just how as I was rocking him, all of the things that I would do, you know, hum, those repetitive lullabies and hummings that I would do with my own children who are now grown. Mm-hmm. It was just such a gift to be able to do that. So truly, Marianne Hassan, you have given a gift to all of us through thank this project you. And through your heartfelt work. And I thank you for your time today on Inclusion Matters. And I look forward to further contact with you. Marian is such a great help in so many of the projects that we've done over the years. And we're just happy to help her spread the word about this exciting new one. So thank you, Marian.
Thank you so much. And thank you for continue to do the work you do. Priscilla, I've known you for many, many years, and I'm time and again, I commend, let me rethink that. I'm a multilingual, so I commend. <Yes. laughs> I commend you for the work that you do. And before many people really came to embrace multilingualism and inclusion, you've been doing this work much before that. So I commend you for that.
Oh, thank you, dear Marian Hassan. All right. So if you want more information about this podcast and any others, and the information that Marian touched on too, we'll have all of that in the bio and the synopsis about this podcast that we've just recorded today, and go to inclusivechildcare.org. And we thank you, Marian Hassan, for joining me today. And we look forward to more conversations. For more information and a wide range of resources, visit inclusivechildcare.org. You'll find information on our coaching services and support on topics such as healthy child development, strategies for encouraging positive behavior, and guidance on including children with unique social, emotional, and learning needs, and much more.